Good evening and welcome back to Editing Aloud. I have with me a panel of some of South Africa's best journalists, joined this evening by Isaiah Mhlanga from Alexander Forbes. Welcome. Who's going to talk to us a little bit later about the medium-term budget and what we expect. But we have to start ahead of a possible announcement from the DA leadership on the DA basically blowing itself up, Rob Rose, the official opposition imploding.
Yeah.
What do you make of it, and what are the consequences for the country?
Well, I mean, this comes days after Herman Mashaba resigned as mayor of Joburg, and that's going to be, I mean, the fact is that Musi Maimane was at Mashaba's announcement this week. You had a sense of solidarity between the two, that there was a crisis brewing. And it seems at this point that the DA is essentially blowing itself back 10, 15 years. It's, you know, we've always had a sense that the DA politics has been fragile over the last couple of months, but now it's reached a crisis point. And I think what they do now, reverting back to Helen Ziller, will determine the future of opposition politics in this country to some extent.
TJ?
Yeah, if you think what a big coup it was for them to win Tswane and Johannesburg in the municipal elections. Yeah.
2016.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of looked to be their model, like a slow expansion to other parts of the country and then proving that you could run that. But none of those two cities, their mayors left before their terms ended. So, I mean, what does that tell you for continuity and, I mean, for retaining leadership? It's just strange. So you vote in the election for a certain mayor because that guy's face is on the poster, but he doesn't stick it out until the next one.
So Rob?
They also weren't able to make a discernible difference in the governance of those cities.
Absolutely.
Like they were in Cape Town.
Yes.
Cape Town is what they said, give us the chance to run your cities, we can do this. They didn't do this in Pretoria and Joburg.
Coalition politics of Joburg with the EFF seem to be very bizarre and complicated. And Sikonati, one has a suspicion, as many people have pointed out, that Mr. Mashaba has swung all the way from free market foundation activist to EFF populist in the space of just a couple of years.
I would think that's quite an extreme. But the fact of the matter is that that coup that TJ was talking about, winning in Tswane and in Johannesburg, particularly in Johannesburg, where you actually even attracted a man like Herman Mashaba. So great was he that he was hated by the EFF. That was just one of the masterstrokes of the DA. Now they have reversed that all of that back. Of course, we have the disadvantage of recording this show just before the media briefing that Musi Maimane is going to give. But let's say he announces his resignation. I think he's 3 months late. He should have announced his resignation at the results of the general election as soon as they were published. If I was Musi Maimane, I was going to stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. I will be stepping down as soon as the Democratic Alliance is able to organize an elective conference, and we will bring it forward. That way you live on your own terms, and you give the members of the Democratic Alliance the opportunity to actually nominate you again back to the position if enough of them still have confidence in you. And this time, you do it right. You get in there, do it right, and put the policies that you want, not the policies that Helen Zille wants, not the policies other people want. You don't become everything to everybody. You choose, I want to be a black party or a mainstream party, or I want to be a right-wing party. You make your choice and go with it.
Drop the ball on that one. Isaiah, medium-term budget next week is going to be not a happy occasion, I suspect. How bad are the numbers going to be? What can government do to get back onto even keel?
I think if you look historically, National Treasury has always been able to provide numbers that looks okay, essentially just hitting where credit rating agencies are looking at, because they know what rating agencies expect, so they can tweak the numbers so that they just fit that. But I think for this time around, it's not going to be about the numbers, because we know the numbers are going to be bad. A fiscal deficit of anywhere, you know, upwards of 6% of GDP, debt-to-GDP ratio going about 65% of GDP. I think those are really big numbers compared to what we have been expecting or what we were told by Treasury in February. The question is going to be, how credible are the numbers? That's going to be the question. It's more credibility than the actual numbers themselves. And I think without massive reforms, which include ESCOM and also some of the reforms that were mentioned in the strategic document that was released by National Treasury, again, even those reforms are not entirely new. We have had them for a very long time. It's more about the intention to implement that is going to make the cut.
Is credibility more important this time than it usually is?
Absolutely, it is. It is very important because for the past couple of decades, we've had economic reforms announced, but lack of implementation. And we've had National Treasury say, let's sell some of the coal-fired generation so that we can reduce ESCOM's debt. But the president comes and says, we are not selling anything. You know, so there's already a conflict between what is being announced within the same administration. So it seems there's no consensus as to what to do with ESCOM.
And to what extent does the budget then reflect that political divide over Eskom's future?
Dito Mboweni is in trouble, so to speak. He was complaining yesterday in Parliament as they were giving Eskom that 59 billion rand that he keeps having to find money that gets to pay only salaries and not much investment and not the required sustainable reforms that should be done. Now he's got to stand up. The moment he dishes out more money again to ESCOM, to South African Airways, that credibility that Isaiah is talking about is gone.
Where does he find that money, Isaiah?
Look, growth is very weak. If you look at nominal growth tracking somewhere 4%, Treasury told us was going to be above 6% at the beginning of the year.
This is so, uninflation, not adjusted.
So that's real plus inflation. Mm. Real growth 0.5%, which is just about a third of what Treasury thought it was going to be at the beginning of the year. So we know from a growth point of view, it's very weak. Tax revenue are going to undershoot. But also from the ability of SARS to collect taxes itself, which is what we call tax buoyancy. For every 1 rand of growth, how much does SARS collect in tax revenues? National Treasury overestimated that, which means there's also going to be a knock on tax revenues. You add SOE bailouts on top of that, it means it's going to be quite difficult for Treasury to be able to collect the revenues which they need. Year to date, out of August, almost all the revenue lines are running behind budget.
So that's corporate, personal, sales tax?
Across almost all of the major tax revenue lines that are running below expectations.
Can I ask a question? I mean, to what extent, I mean, Hillary, you know this, I mean, to what extent will this budget not tip us over into a downgrade for Moody's? Can we avoid that?
Would have to be negative outlook. I mean, Moody's is not going to downgrade straight away, but on next Friday night, in fact, it is due to provide an update. So what chance they go into negative outlook, which sets the clock ticking
for, say, towards a downgrade, right?
If I were them, I could hardly avoid it, but they seem to avoid it time after time.
I think there are a number of factors. It's not only the economic indicators that matter. Remember, from 2015, we were downgraded because of the weakness in the institutional pillar, which accounts for quite a significant proportion of a rating. That institutional pillar, over the last year alone, we have the World Bank ease of doing business improving quite significantly, 7 points from 67 to 60 over the last 12 months. That is an improvement in the institutional pillar. And what we see from all the commissions that are taking place, yes, we haven't had any major figure being thrown in jail or being held accountable as people would like to see, but the hands of justice take some time to bite. But also, the economic turnaround is taking some time. I think we have to also concede that it takes some time.
We've got to have some teeth to bite. In the South African context, unfortunately, no teeth, Baba.
No, that's true. But I think if you look at the repair at SARS itself,
even if hands
NPA,
did have teeth,
at National Treasury, in many of the institutions that we have seen some gradual repair of those institutions, and that will count positively for the institutional pillar. So if you are a Moody's, you can say, yes, growth is weak, but we have seen some significant improvement in the institutional pillar, which set a base for a faster implementation of reforms in the near future. And you can withhold, or you can say, let me change the outlook to negative to give these guys some time, perhaps they can implement.
Let's
and you may avoid the
let's
downgrade.
Let's smuggle Isaiah into Moody's to be our ambassador there and to be
the TJ?
Well, the question is on the revenue side, I mean, whether we've hit bottom yet. So many of the things that that sort of chip away at people's tax compliance, there's a lag before it really hits home. So many of the things that we're seeing now, that's still the hangover from those last few years of, you know, the state capture era. So now you wonder how long before this really works through the system, because the reason they're not collecting taxes is because people sort of find ways to really avoid it now.
Is immigration not a factor? It's definitely
that is also chipping away, and that's another one of the factors that I'm
more the weakness of the economy than
in a weak economy. People are going to look for ways to avoid tax if they possibly can, legally or illegally.
Well, legally if they can, that's true. But I think that the weakness comes from lower VAT collections, because expenditure from the household sector is quite weak. But also, if you look at company profitability, it has been very weak, and that's where you can't collect much corporate income tax. Mm-hmm. I think those are the biggest shortfalls where we see it.
But on top of that, I think TTJ is saying that once compliance has been eroded, it takes a long time to persuade people.
Have we hit
back
bottom
again.
Yet? That's the question.
And there were hopes, I think, Azhar, that SARS would turn around quite quickly from the sort of wreckage of state capture, but clearly this is not going in that
direction. I think the way I normally characterize it is institutions and the economy are like a bus. It drives at 120 kilometers per hour, you hit dead brakes, it doesn't stop. It goes for some time. Mm-hmm. So we are still in that momentum in Asia that is still on the downward direction because of the actions or inactions of the past. We're not yet at the bottom. Because, I mean, if you look at this year, growth is 0.6 or 0.5. Last year it was 0.8. It means we're still deteriorating despite the positive actions that we have seen year to date.
Mm. We'll talk briefly about Eskom before we take a break. Sikonathi, Eskom's CEO and the special paper are due to be announced before the end of this month, which gives us just a very few days, along with the debt restructuring. What are your hopes? What would you like to see in such a paper?
Well,
such a CEO.
It's really simple what has to be done. It does not have to be rocket science, but we seem to keep talking and talking. When did we first get the announcement of this paper and the breakup of Eskom? Probably a year now. And nothing has happened other than the talking. So what do I want to see? I would like to see Eskom, indeed, just get on with it. We've been talking for so long. Do what you said you would do, and then let's see what happens when you've broken Eskom into three. Go attack those coal prices. Go attack those inflated contracts inside Eskom. You see them starting to collect back some money, including the action against Deloitte this week. That's just the start. You need to go address the people that still work there for themselves inside Eskom. They own the trucks that rail the coal, and they decide what they are paying themselves for.
Azhar, what are investors looking for in the next week and in the budget on the subject of Eskom?
I think first and foremost is the ability of Eskom to provide reliable electricity continuously,
which it has not been doing.
Absolutely.
This last
week. The last week we have been plunged into load shedding, and we are also on a road trying to attract fixed investment in the country, $100 billion that we are looking for. But if you don't have power, you can't produce anything. So we will be unable to attract investment if we can't guarantee the supply of electricity. But as far as Eskom's debt is concerned, I think we just have to understand that Eskom's debt is South Africa's debt. There is no way to go around it. We can form special purpose vehicles. We can't hide Eskom's debt. Ultimately, it's going to be paid by South Africans. So you just take $250 billion off and put it onto the state and go on with life.
And what does the debt ratio then look like? I mean, what does the public debt
it will
look
goes,
like?
It will go to 70% of GDP. But I think what becomes important is the ability to service that debt. If you can service that debt on a continuous basis, then it's fine. The economy picks up, that ratio will fall. Because at the end of the day, it is the economy that determines the ability to service the debt.
So as a country, we are now directly having to just pay the interest on Eskom's debt.
There's no other way.
Yeah. Rob?
No, I mean, I was going to agree absolutely that we don't have, you know, we just basically, like the country, we just have days where we just collapse, we just break down, you know, and have to get up and pick ourselves up the next day. But I mean, in terms of that, it's just, you're right, it's just plowing through where we are at the moment and fixing the institutional gaps that mean it won't break down tomorrow, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And,
the problem with Eskom is the longer Eskom does not supply reliable electricity, I mean, that has a knock-on effect onto the economy. So the growth that we need just doesn't come back. I mean, small business owners are the guys that suffer most from load shedding. I mean, if your payment terminal doesn't work when someone comes to buy something, you can't do business.
As Sikonati said many times before, though, imagine if we did have growth of 3%. Mm. You wouldn't be able to provide the power to make that happen.
That's the thing, yeah.
So it's almost fitting that our growth is at such a low ebb, is that we can barely keep the lights on as it is. Imagine if we had a really growing economy.
It's like a yin and yang between Eskom and growth.
Do you guys actually remember that we've been talking about this for 12 years in terms of Eskom? Since 2007, when we had the first bout of load shedding, I pray we were not talking about this 3 years from now. But then we've got in the new IRP, we've got no new generation coming up for the next 3 years other than the committed projects. And of course, Gwede Mantashe says there's no electricity crisis in this country. He says that an hour after he's just published the wrong version of the IRP.
It did not look good for, about institutions, as it were. But another industry where there's been a sort of variety of load shedding is aviation, TJ. SAA Technical being basically sanctioned by the Civil Aviation Authority, grounding planes. Mm-hmm. There have been issues with SAA Technical and indeed with the Civil Aviation Authority. What is this all about, and is this, should we be getting on an aeroplane?
So, well, please don't see this as any sort of advice about your travel. I'm not a travel agent.
We have to, the budget is in Cape Town.
The budget is in Cape Town, so do we walk there or do we fly there?
We've got at least we have a reliable train service in South Africa.
Did Comair cancel its contract with SAA Technical?
So they're moving out of it gradually.
Okay.
They are building up their own capacity and doing a sort of a deal with Lufthansa Technik. But what's interesting is Comair has complained for a while about SAA Technical and how that's contributed to the many delays that, I mean, anecdotally, you might know that you just often have delays on certain airlines. And they've complained that this has contributed to their delays. And then one of their new competitors, who does in-house maintenance, they've had some of the best records when it comes to being on time. So that's the reason why you move away. There's nothing that's so damaged. Well, probably very damaging if an airplane falls out of the sky, but it's nothing for a well-functioning airline that is as damaging as being late all the time.
And so don't you get a phenomenon? This is almost like the utility death spiral that Eskom's in. The more incompetent it becomes, the more people sort of move away, and then its revenues. Well, I mean, could you get this kind of thing in SAA where, you know, even servicing other people's airplanes, which has been one of the mainstays, people are not going to walk out. And, I mean, are we going to be bailing out SAA forever as well?
I think that's the challenge that Minister Mboweni has, because when he provided bailouts on the last rounds to SOEs, he said there's not going to be any further bailouts without strict conditions. And I'm not sure if those conditions have been met for any other future bailouts. And with his own, or in his own words, he said, SAA is not strategic, it should be sold essentially. So perhaps this may just give him a reason to say, look, it's not even being able to service other airlines, so we may as well just close it up.
And he's already admitted that that is not his decision to make. Yeah. His is only to say, I won't put money there until you meet these conditions. And guess what? Conditions are no conditions. We will be bailing out SAA. A few more years if we still have the ANC as the government. That's what it is. Or rather, if we still have COSATU as the government, we will still have bail South African Airways. SAA Technical.
Well, you know that the DA is not going to come and take it from them. So.
No. The DA is busy, has shot itself on both feet, so it cannot even move to the union buildings physically. So forget about it. COSATU is the real government. And we are not going to get anything privatized, restructured to such an extent that it can work. COSATU will keep it as it is. But I want to tell you about SAA Technical. 10 years ago, it employed 3,000 technicians and engineers. Today, SAA Technical employs 3,200 people. Half of them are, or less than half of them, are engineers. What are they doing there?
It's too depressing. I think we have to leave the country and go to a South African
Let's
leave the country and go to Cape Town.
We're now going to Amsterdam with TJ, where Prosus, which we used to know as Naspers, is in a hostile takeover battle for an equivalent of Uber Eats. TJ, why this is kind of quite speedy after the company listed in Amsterdam.
Yes, so they listed
in why a hostile?
Well, so listed about a month ago. Prosus is the internet assets of Naspers. So Naspers owns 74% of that. Naspers still sort of domiciled here, but Prosus is then the vehicle in Europe. And they've said from the start, Bob van Dijk, the CEO, incidentally, Naspers and Prosus had the same management teams and same boards, but he said they want to attack the next $100 billion of capital, which is a lot. So first deal that we've now seen is they want to buy Just Eat. They've made an all-cash offer, and it's £4.9 billion. So, I mean, remember the staggering number when Chris de Vries sold Pepkor to Steinhoff for $59-60 billion? This is 93 billion rand. It's as big as it gets with acquisitions. Now, obviously, you can argue that Prosus is no longer really a South African company, but I mean, the kind of stage they play on, this is still a big number. And this, if this acquisition goes through, they will be the largest food delivery player in the world. Now, Prosus has these three pillars that it's built on: food delivery, mobile payments, and e-classifieds. And this will make the food delivery part of that a massive part of the business. So now you have to ask yourself, is food delivery really the kind of thing, a very competitive sector, that we want all our pension money in? Mm.
Rob Rose, you're the author of a book on Steinhoff. Very large acquisition, hostile, offshore. Should this ring alarm bells?
I mean, it depends. I think, to me, I don't think that Marcus Joost is working in the background to create accounts for Naspers. But, I mean, to me, I think buying companies that are immature in markets where you're not the absolute top, companies that might be loss-making at the moment, I think that's a very risky thing to do in the digital space. I mean, we've seen a lot of the Silicon Valley titans fall apart. I mean, Theranos is obviously the most prime example of that. But, you know, this is a very risky gambit. But this is Naspers' strategy.
Mm. On the other hand, Naspers took a risk with Tencent, and look where it is now.
Yes, but, so I mean, how many Tencents are there in the world? So do you keep risking all your pension money on what you hope will be the next Naspers, next Tencent?
I would look at it this way. 93 billion rand, certainly to all of us in South Africa, is quite a big number. But what is 93 billion rands relative to the market cap of Prosus? Mm. I submit it's just less than 10%. That's how you look at it. If you want to get on the big scale, play with the big boys, go for it and do it. Yes, for every 200 deals that Naspers considers, at least it will invest in 10. And maybe two or three will shoot the lights out, and by far, Prosus or Tencent is by far the best for now. So why stop there?
Mm. And just to comment on South African companies going abroad. I mean, are we going to see more of it? Given that we've had a very mixed result,
it's quite mixed. Over the past 10 years, we've seen companies go and invest in Nigeria, go invest in Australia, in Mozambique, but they have been banned. Which means the environment is not as easy as they think it will be. It's much more easier here. They know the environment, they know the customer base, and it's quite easy in terms of some of the regulatory burdens which they have to jump over. Likely it's going to continue. South Africa's growth remains very, very poor. So to look for revenue streams, companies has to look outside to try and boost their revenue. So I think it's a trend that's likely to continue.
Rob Rose, happy birthday. It is the Financial Mail's 60th birthday coming up this week. Tell us about it. Tell us about the special edition you are publishing for the occasion.
Well, for the anniversary edition, we got a whole lot of South African leaders to write for us. So the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, wrote the cover story for us. We had Tilly Madonsela writing. We had Chris Becker, the chairman of Naspers, who didn't write about the Just Eat deal, but he wrote about other things. We had Sim Chabalala, the CEO of Standard Bank. We had some very big influential power brokers. He wrote about their thoughts on where we are as a country and how we need to reinvigorate ourselves. And we look back, I suppose, on what it means to be a print publication in 2019, given the fact that 25%, 30% of print publications have closed down in the States in the last decade or so.
So 60 years is quite a...
60 years is
quite an impressive
milestone. It's a millennium in print terms.
I must say he looks good for 60, eh?
He doesn't. And the magazine is looking very good.
Yeah, it's the hip.
And that's all we have time for now. Please join us again next week for another edition of Editing Aloud.